welcome to another episode of the Portable Magic Dispenser, a library podcast for your school library, public library, whatever. My name is Lucas Maxwell, and I'm the librarian here at Glenthorne High School. And today I'm going to talk to you about a couple of activities I've been doing in library lessons that hopefully you'll find useful. One of them is a nonfiction scavenger hunt. And this is essentially a library lesson I've been doing with ages 11 to 12, so years 7 and 8. Probably do this once a year at least. Sometimes I tweak it to do a couple different things, but the goal is pretty simple, and that's to get them, to get the students familiar with different parts of a nonfiction book. Index, glossary, table contents, bibliography, whatever. It may not surprise you, but a lot of students, I find anyway, aren't familiar or forget or just haven't been introduced to those types of things and where to find them in a book. And I think that as they get older, of course, those things are pretty useful skills. And it also is a good way to highlight new nonfiction that we have in the library. I've tried this year to kind of beef up the nonfiction collection and, you know, make it more interesting and more relevant. And I did a lot of weeding at the beginning of the year, which was good. Probably one of the most popular episodes I've done for the podcast is on weeding. And so anyway, this is a good way to get them. Hey, you can, these books are here and they're really good. You can borrow them, of course. Sometimes I've been surprised this year, especially our younger students, if I have books on display, they're sometimes asking me, can I borrow them? And it's just something that I take for granted that they think they can borrow. They can't. Sometimes they think they can't borrow books that are on display. I'm not sure. I've seen this a lot more this year. I'm not 100% sure where that's come from, why I've given off that vibe or whatever. I don't think I have, but it's been a good way to kind of like remind them that you can borrow all these books and, you know, they're really good. And these ones that I've been choosing are pretty brand new. The lesson itself takes around 25 minutes, and it's been really popular. So I split the class into groups. Usually there's four or five in a group. Three or four is probably better, but we have around 30 kids per class. So if I have five in a group, six groups of five is pretty good. We have eight kind of big tables here in the library, so it's enough room and they can move around. And I've got the nonfiction underneath the windows. We have very lucky to have some natural light in here. We've got the windows here, so we have shelving under the windows, and it's pretty close to the tables, which is good. At the start of the lesson, I try to gauge how much the whole class knows about indices, glossaries, bibliographies. I haven't had a group yet from year 7, so age 11 and 12, who know what a bibliography is. So that's not surprising, but they all seem to know. Most, if not all, know what a glossary is, and I would say about 60% knew what an index was. I also get them, I really just want them to like use the table of contents, which is something, surprisingly, maybe they just don't use. If you're thinking about them engaging with nonfiction text online, or getting, you know, quote-unquote real information online, they aren't really probably engaging with those types of parts of a book. So so once I do that, I explain the rules. So the rules are that I'll have a stack of 10 books, and I kind of put them on display on an empty table. And then when I say go, one person from each team approaches the table of books and takes one, and only one, book, along with a sheet that I've written out. Now, the sheet has one question per each of those books. And the question requires them to use something like the index, the glossary, the bibliography, etc. So what I do is when they go back to their table, they grab their sheet, they rush back, they find their book on the sheet, and then they try to answer the question. And once they've answered the question, they return the book to the table and then take another one, another book, and then repeat that process until they've answered all the questions. So, for example, I've got this really good book called The Power of Advertising, which has cool logos and ads from throughout history. And there's a section on Lego and how they did some famous ads. And my question for the book simply is, what famous TV family did Lego use as part of an ad campaign? I kind of leave it at that. So they eventually will figure out that they need to use the index to find the word Lego and go from there. And once they go from there, they'll see that Lego's on page, whatever, let's say 55. They go to 55 and it's a whole thing about Lego and their history and blah, blah, blah. And then they need to find where the famous TV family is. And there's a picture of the TV family as well and a little description. So they will see that it's The Simpsons. But I want them to think, okay, I need to use the index. Sometimes they'll see them kind of like looking for the glossary or using the glossary from that thing. And it's like, no, you need to find the page number that this is on. So as they're doing all of these questions, I'm wandering around providing clues if needed or just seeing how they're doing. So it's a race. It depends on which team gets there first. But the team that finished first usually wins bookmarks, but sometimes I just give everybody bookmarks just for taking part. It's really fun and fast. And it's a great way to introduce these things. And some of the questions are nonfiction texts that deal with mental health for, you know, ages 11 plus. And really, it's a good way just to have those discussions. Not that I'm a mental health expert, but say, like, these are some great websites, or this is a great book itself. And I get them to, I think the book says, like, name three aspects of a panic attack. So they need to look for panic attack, but panic attack is like a subheading in the index under anxiety or something in that particular book. So I get them to do that. And really the bibliography question, I just get them to simply, because I don't tell them what a bibliography is at the beginning. I just gauge, do they know what it is? And what I get them to do with the bibliography is simply to tell me, how is it organized? And it takes them a minute, but once they figure it out, it's pretty straightforward. Oh, this is alphabetical by, you know, last name or alphabetical by name, they usually say. And then at the end, I can go over, like, this is what a bibliography is, and this is why it's important, and this is what you need it for, this is how you can use it, this is why you will be using one most likely in the future. So that's that game, and they love it. It's like a really fast paced, as I said, it only takes 25 minutes or so. Some teams will race through. I check all their answers, and if a team has got an answer wrong, I say, oh, you might need to go back and get that book. The challenge is, if a team needs one book, like, oh, we've only got one question left, and another team has that book, they will often crowd around that table and wait for that team to finish and snatch it out of their hands. So I need to be on top of that and be 100% aware that that team only has one question left, and to be make it everything fair. So that's the challenge with that, and the just like the frustration that they can experience if they do have one question left and they want to get that book as fast before anybody else. There is sometimes some arguing. Maybe the answer is to have duplicates, but that's not really ideal. In nonfiction, I don't think having duplicates is needed, to be honest. For me, nonfiction is by far least circulating item, not because I'm not trying, but it's just the way it is. I would say we have the least amount of nonfiction. We don't have as much nonfiction as fiction, of course. And it just doesn't move as much for me. And I try, but it it's the way it is. So this is my attempt to kind of like highlight it. And it's, yeah, they seem to enjoy the lesson. And it's a good way to introduce another lesson, which I may have talked about before, which is, it's talking, okay, these books are reliable. They have good facts. They have important information. And they've shown their sources, therefore they've done their research. It's a good way to lead into another lesson that I do later on, which is each table, and I may have discussed this in a previous episode, but each table, so those maybe those same groups, they're all given a different news story, okay, a different one, and only one of them is real. And they need to work out what are the red flags in the real and the fake ones. And they're all stories that I didn't make up these stories. So these stories have all been published on the internet somewhere and they all seem real. So there was another one. We're on a Lego theme today for some reason. The Lego one was that there was a new app called Find My Brick, which you could download the app, scan your iPhone over a pile of Lego, and it would augmented reality show you within that pile where that particular brick you're looking for is. And most groups think that's real, but it's not. And there's another one like Virgin Airlines making a plane with bendable wings to make him faster. That one never gets picked. There's another one, horse jockeys are now creating headphones for their horses so the horses can listen to music to get them pumped up for the race and things like that. That one never gets picked. I'm trying to think what the other ones are, but the one that's real is about this really weird story about ice cream men in Scotland in the 80s. There was like turf wars between ice cream men, and they were using ice cream vans as like cover to sell, you know, illegal products, but they were also selling ice cream, and they fought each other for territory, you know, beat each other up and stuff. And they rarely pick it, just because it seems so silly, but it was quite obviously scary and violent for some people. But that is how I do it. But there are red flags with the other ones. There's there's maybe a few grammar mistakes. There's exclamation points. There's a lot of grammar red flags. And there's just a lot of silliness. But they love that one because they get a chance to read the story and work together and determine, okay, is this real or is this complete nonsense? And then we do a vote. And I get the English teacher who's in to decide. And we only had one teacher get it right. Most teachers chose the Lego. And then I had kids swear that the Lego app was real, but I read it was an April Fool's joke by Lego. So I'm going to stick with my guns and say it isn't real. I'm happy to prove me wrong if you do listen to this. I will apologize to the groups if that is the case. So those two lessons, kind of like back-to-back, with year 7 and 8, ages 11 to 12, was very popular. And they worked really well together. Okay? So, okay. The next thing I'm going to talk about, just the last one, is all around poetry and books spine poetry. Now, if you're not sure what books spine poetry is, you can just Google it. It's really simple and fun, but harder than you think. So it's simply making a poem using book titles. Now, I ran this maybe 7 years ago in the old library space, and I didn't think it through. Like most things, I don't think through. And I just like, yeah, let's go find some books. And it obviously destroyed the library shelves. And I spent a very, very long time putting all the books back. Now that we've got library lessons for year 7 and 8 on a more continual basis than 7 years ago, I'm not going to do that. So that's the downer. But it has been, I didn't know how they would take to it, and they have absolutely loved it. So this is the thing. So Earth Day is a big, you know, part of this is around Earth Day. So that's the extra kind of challenge. So what I do is I say, we're going to work with poetry today. We're going to do a competition around poetry. You're going to be in groups. So you're going to be in teams. So they're in their little tables. Usually when I say we're going to do an activity around poetry, there is a groan. And I get it. There's just some don't. Some like it, but some just hate. But then I say, The thing is, the catch is, the poems have already been written for you, and they love that. So that's really cool. And then they'll kind of like perk up, like, "Well, what does he mean?" And so I tell them. So books, blind poetry, again, just that you take books and you stack them, and you make a poem as best you can. Now, I give them little hints. I say, "Okay, so these are just my rules." So I say, "We're going to find at least four books. Each book is a line, okay, of your poem. It does not have to rhyme. That's the number one question they have. You can repeat titles." I tell them that. Don't mind that. Think of it like having an extra copy of the book. And you cannot remove words from the title. So if the title is Clap When You Land, you can't just use When You Land. It has to be Clap When You Land, which is a great book, by the way. So that's that rule. You can't rearrange words. It can't be land when you clap. See what I mean? They're not allowed to do that. They're not allowed to add words. They're not allowed to add word the whatever. But I tell them, look, we have lots of books that have one word titles. Moonrise, once, wonder, booked, posted. We have books like that. So I show them that. I say, look, we have all these things. So I say, try, you have to get at least four books. I would say, and I always suggest, maybe don't go over 10 just because of time-wise. The timing of this lesson takes about 30 minutes, maybe 20, 28 minutes. So there's that. And then, what else do I say? Oh, so I give each table a piece of paper. I said one of you has to be the writer, the recorder. When I call your table, you're going to go out and you're going to look for books and look for titles. The catch is, the titles have to be or not have to be, but your poem, for extra points, I'd give like we give like achievement stamps, extra stamps for a team who makes a poem that is related to the environment, and that usually gets them going. And I give them again some example, and I show them an example of a book's fine poetry. So I have a book, there's a book called The Last Bear by Hannah Gold. There's a book called Posted by John David Anderson. There's a book called The Hypnotist. Sorry, I forgot the name of the author. And there's a book called Into the Jungle, which is, I believe, by Catherine Rundell. So we have those books. The Last Bear, Posted, The Hypnotist, Into the Jungle. There you go. I say, this is a poem. What does it mean exactly? I don't know, but you could imagine an angry bear shoving a hypnotist into a post box and sending them to the jungle. And is that environmentally themed? Maybe, kind of. The book, the and then I go into like a description of like the books. Like, these books are amazing, by the way. The Last Bear and Posted and Into the Jungle, they're all great. I go into a whole thing of these books. And then I say, once you get called, you spread out around the library, you find titles, and then you report back to your recorder. Once you think you've got enough titles, and I always say, try to get 10. Don't go under four. If you just want to use four, that's absolutely fine. Try to find one word title books that might help you, and just get a bank of them and make like a word cloud or a list or whatever. And then sit down and take 10 minutes and rearrange those titles so they make a poem. And once I got that in their heads, and I make it a competition, I'm gonna have prizes. It gets really they love it. And the other rule, of course, which I forgot to even mention, the number one rule is you cannot take books off the shelf. You must just read them. And yes, groups forget and they grab and because they're very excited, they rush back to their table where the recorder is. But I have to click. No, let's put it back because it just gets. Like Friday, last day I did this, I had five groups in, one after another after another. So there's no way I could have put all the books back on the shelf. One trick I've done, this was with a group that we had like seven students, and that's a very rare thing. But it's one class, we have very, very low students. And just being 100% honest, their ability is quite low. So we have a recently returned shelf with loads of books. These are books that have been recently returned. And there's tons of books on there. And I said, okay, you can take books off this shelf, but don't take books off the other shelves. And because it didn't matter which order those ones were in. And we had such a low number of students, it didn't matter. And they really dug it. They really got into it. And every single group has made really cool poems. So what we're going to do, I'm going to share them with English teachers. We're going to try to judge for each year group, maybe like top five, get some prizes, some free books. And that's it. And so that leads into an open mic that we're doing. I do a whole thing on how to run a great open mic. But we're going to running an open mic, and we are going to do it around Earth Day, if possible. So the open mic is soon. So then this is a great way to promote the open mic. You know, there's an Earth Day open mic happening in the library next week. You could come as a group and recite your poetry if you wanted to. There's no pressure to, of course, but I tell them you could do that. You could come and talk, and you'd be up for 30 seconds, not even, and tell your poem, say your poem, get a prize maybe, because I'm going to give prizes for this one, I think. On and on, see? So it's been a really, and the teachers have really gotten into it, and the teachers have been making their poems and sharing them with the group, and I really loved it. So it's something I haven't done in years, but I don't know why. I think because of the kind of negative impact it had when I was like, oh, I got to take these books off the shelf. And it was another English teacher who was like, why don't you just get him to write it down and go back? And I was like, oh, yeah, I never even thought of that. Because in my head, you had to take the books off the shelf. But what I think I'll do is the winning groups, if I can find the books, like if the books haven't been borrowed, I will make a display of those books, you see what I mean, like of their poem using the books, and take a photo and then put it up on a display. Here's the winning three poems from year 8. Here's the winning three poems from year 7. On and like so on. Maybe here's the best teacher one. And even though they initially wrote them down, they'll get to see them stacked up on in a photo or on a maybe just a physical display, which is better. Hopefully that makes sense. So there's almost like two and a half new library lessons that I've been doing. And again, they've been really, really popular here in the library. So I hope they are popular with you as well. And if you need to contact me, best way is on Twitter at Lucas J. Maxwell. I'm always looking to kind of like collaborate with other people. So that's the best way. So yeah, that's it. Thanks very much. Take care. Talk to you later. Bye.